This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Guys, since we talked last, I cracked my ribs.
Oh.
Ouch.
Like your ribs in your body or your ribs on your plate?
Not my McRibs, but my actual ribs.
If a McRib cracked, I feel like that would be a problem. Yeah,
that is a very painful thing, especially because you're laughing right now.
Yeah. Fortunately, I'm about 10 days out, so it's not as brutally painful as it was. But I still can't sleep flat. I'm having to sleep at like a 45 degree angle, which is not exactly conducive to a good night's sleep.
I remember when I did it at first. It's like every breath hurts, and if someone makes you laugh, you want to punch them.
Yeah, don't make me laugh, don't make me cough, don't make me sneeze.
Okay. Well, this is the unfunny podcast episode.
Well, I can handle it now. 10 days ago, I was like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. So,
Aaron, how'd you crack your rib?
Stupid. You know,
I mean, clearly.
Now, let me just tell you my history. This is the fourth time I've broken or cracked my ribs.
Wow.
So, you know, the first time I did it was 30 years ago. I went to work sick, and as I was walking up the stairs into the office, I got faint, you know, because I was running a fever. I shouldn't have been at the office. And I thought I was going to fall down the stairs, so I grabbed the handrail and to support myself so I wouldn't fall. And I pulled myself into the handrail straight into my ribs and cracked my ribs. That was the first time. The second time was the exact same scenario. Went to work sick, same kind of thing. I mean, exact same scenario, cracked my ribs. And that was, you know, at that time I was like, okay, never go to work when you're running a fever ever again. That was the lesson, right?
I bet you didn't actually learn that lesson.
When I'm running a fever, I have just decided that I don't leave the house. You know, I just like, you know, people don't need to be, I don't need to be making other people sick. I will go to work sick, but not if I'm running a fever. Particularly since COVID. The third time I was in the backyard working. And the dogs were flipping out at the fence, you know, like they were murdering someone. And so I went running to see what it was because I had a fear that the neighbor dog had burst through the back fence. And so I'm running across the pool deck and I had water running in the pool. And my foot caught the water hose and I went smashing down onto the pool deck. And I mean, bounced off the pool deck and heard the crack. You know, and that was the worst break I ever had. I had to, you know, put up all my tools because I'd been doing yard work in the backyard, went inside and got the wife. Hey, honey, I think we need to go to the emergency room, you know. And then, you know, the doctor asked me, why did you put your tools away before you went in and told your wife you needed to go to the ER? I'm like, because she doesn't know where to put them. You know, I had to make sure they got in the right place because, you know. When else were they going to get put away? But this break, the one that happened about 10 days ago, I was running between meetings. I was working from home and I went dashing out of my office to go refresh my cup of coffee. And my foot caught my shoe caught the foot of the dog gate. And it was just enough to send me crashing down. And fortunately, it wasn't a big break, but it was a crack. And it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant, I have to say.
Do you step over the dog gate then instead of take it down? Or?
You know, what I did is I got rid of the dogs, got rid of the gate. You know, I just figured that was the lesson, right? So, you know,
I put the dogs in
a box, set them out in the yard and said, free to home. So,
I meant when you did it because I used to step over the gates and I quit doing that after I took a fall.
No, the dog gate was actually blocking another room. So, I mean, I had a clear shot, but it's got these long feet. And so I've had to adjust how the feet were because it's always been a trip hazard, you know, the way it stabilizes. But, you know, I just never thought that it was an issue until it was an issue. So, but, you know, what's funny is that the dogs broke free of the dog gate when I fell and they're all kind of standing around me. Hey, you okay, man? Yeah. And the wife was fussing at me because, you know, she's like, okay, well, we need to go to the doctor. I'm like, you know, I have been to the doctor three previous occasions with broken ribs. They can't do anything for you. So yeah. I'm not coughing up blood. I don't have time to waste with going to the ER. So I'm just
all they're gonna do is X-ray you and then give you pain pills that I don't want to take to begin with.
Yeah. Well, and they'd give me hydrocodone, and you know, I don't have time to be doped up, you know. So that's exactly what I did. I just you know, played hurt the rest of the week. So anyway, that's been my time.
That's what you've done since we last spoke.
That's right. That and read a lot of old comic books. And let me just say this as a preface to the show. I have not enjoyed much in the way of comics, new comics, over the last 2 weeks. I have really enjoyed my deep dive into my Comixology archive. I have read a ton of old books over the last 2 weeks. I'm really diving deep into the Fantastic Four archive with the new casting announcement for the MCU movie. I've been, you know, reading like as old as like issue 80 of the first volume of Fantastic Four, and reading things north of that, reading the Jerry Conway period, the, you know, Joe Sinnott, Roy Thomas, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, terrific artists, terrific writers. I just really love that sort of vintage Fantastic Four stuff. I started reading Fantastic Four as a kid, like around issue 160 or so. So that area about 100 issues before that always kind of feels like the sweet spot. It's always like that stuff that I didn't get to read before. Mm-hmm. And so I really do enjoy kind of plumbing those depths. And some of that, I mean, the sexism is rampant. You know, the way Reed talks to Sue is really terrible by today's
standards.
Is
that why it's your favorite era?
It is, absolutely. No, but I love how the Fantastic Four is just so in charge. You know, they are respected. You know, everyone kind of looks up to them, even the Avengers. You know, they were at that time the premier superhero team in the Marvel Universe, and that has really shifted over time. They are not nearly as premier as they had been, and I just enjoy that era of Marvel storytelling and how, you know, that issue Spider-Man, you know, can be seen from the rooftop of the Baxter Building. You know, you can literally see what's happening in another book in that panel, you know, by looking across the horizon. I love that era of Marvel. I think it's a lot of fun.
I loved when you would just see characters in the background and try to spot them and recognize them, because at most there might be a little blurb that says, you know, see what Spider-Man's up to in this issue.
Yeah. You know, with the little asterisk, you know, say, you know, you can see what Spider-Man's doing over there. Rascally Roy, you know, I just always get a kick out of that. So,
you know, you make a good point, though. I mean, modern comics, I'd say we're about 50-50. I mean, in my enjoyment, I'm loving everything Energon Universe. I'm loving everything Jonathan Hickman is writing, whether that be Gods or Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. Like, I'm genuinely enjoying some books. And on the flip side, some books are either just okay or just kind of passing the time.
Yeah.
It's definitely a 50-50 in current months.
Yeah.
I find that I just don't care about whatever their event is anymore. It's like there's no stakes. Everything is just going to be reset. And it was always the case, but it used to feel like this was a joined universe and whatever was coming was going to be built on the next, not that whatever's coming is a new writer just ignoring everything that's come before.
Go ahead, Aaron.
No, you go, Paul.
Well, I was going to say, this week, you know, when I picked up my books, I picked up, you know, amongst the books I purchased Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin 2, issue 1. And I opened the comic, or, you know, swiped to the second page, and I'm like, wait, did I like Last Ronin issue? The first Last Ronin? And I quickly realized, no, I don't know that I did like The Last Ronin. I looked at it back with rose-colored glasses before I made this purchase, because I got, according to Comixology or Kindle, I got 26% of the way into this issue and gave the fuck up. Yeah. It is just brutal to read. And I'm sure I'll finish it, but it was just brutal to read.
Yeah, I didn't do any of that, because I enjoyed the very first Last Ronin miniseries. and I did not care for the second.
I don't feel like I did. I remember us talking about the first Last Ronin series, and I think I enjoyed bits of it, but mostly like the flashback bits and the end where Michelangelo dies and he's reunited with his brothers in heaven. I think I liked that, but I think that's all I liked.
Well, and that was my thing, is that story is done. I don't want the next generation.
Yeah. So
you don't need the second to the Last Ronin.
Yeah. Well, now there's four Ninja Turtles again.
And yeah, like, they're not Ronin in any way.
I'm like, I don't know that this is actually the Last Ronin. They could say from the world of the Last Ronin or something, but you know, calling it the Last Ronin 2 is a bit of a misnomer. I'm out on Ninja Turtles until Jason Aaron comes in and does his thing, and I'll give that one a shot.
Yeah. So my nostalgia has been this week is I've been on a big Planet of the Apes bend, partially because of the trailers for the movies, which there are some interesting trailers out now for different things. But yeah, so I've been on a bit of a kick of that. I've been trying to watch some of the things that, like, I am a huge fanboy. I have watched the original series, you know, no less than 7 or 8 times. I have owned it on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray. But there are a couple things I've never gotten my hands on. The live-action TV show and the cartoon. So I was watching on YouTube the live-action TV show because I can't find it to buy for less than, like, $100 if I want to get it in a format that anything in this country plays. And so, like, I've been on this huge kick. Well, then I get a message from my boss, and it's me and a batch of people. He's like, hey, last March, I sent you guys all Amazon gift cards. I see that none of you had claimed them, so I'm resubmitting them. Keep an eye out for them. And, of course, I look at it, and it's like, yeah, no, I thought it was, you know, a phishing email. you expect without telling us that we're going to actually click on
that's thing? Hilarious that no one claimed theirs.
Yeah. So when I claimed it, I went out and I was looking through my Amazon wish list, which is my way to tell people what to buy me for Christmas. And one of the books on there was my it's Timeline of the Planet of the Apes. This is a book that goes through all of the comics and movies and TV shows and creates a timeline of everything that happened through the original series. And it is fascinating because a lot of the comics I had never read, and you get some of like these events in there. There's some behind the scenes things, like things that were cut from movies and movies that didn't happen that will be mentioned in it. A lot of behind the scenes conversations, but it's just fascinating from the world building standpoint, how much stuff is in there. And I'm realizing just how many more time travelers there were than I ever realized. I mean, I realized that when I watched the first episode of the TV show, and they're told that another batch of astronauts had showed up 10 years earlier. So it's like a lot of people from different eras between like the 70s all the way to the 2060s have been dumped in various time points of the apes. And so I got all these little details about that, and I'm just loving the book. The book stops right around the time that the it's before the new series started, before the new remakes. So it before is time
the Tim Burton movie or after the Tim Burton
it
movie?
It does include the Tim Burton as a separate timeline.
Gotcha. That's really cool. Is it currently in print, or did you have to buy like a vintage copy?
It is. I'm assuming it's vintage, but it is brand new. But it doesn't. Great. I don't think it's a currently in print thing. It's definitely an older book.
I have never seen that book before. And I, you posted an image of it in our chat, and I was like, ooh, I'm very interested in this.
So, yeah, it was cool. It was even interesting seeing the Tim Burton stuff included, because I hate that movie.
Yeah.
But it is its own separate timeline in there.
That's super cool. Makes you almost want to run a role-playing game set in the universe.
It entirely does. That's been all that I've been thinking about all week since the book came in, is I really want to run a game set here.
Yeah,
especially with all of these details on timelines.
Yeah, that's when the first edition of the Star Trek Encyclopedia landed on my desk. That was I've got to run a game now. I mean, that's you know, when you get that kind of, you know, technical detail, you know, it really gets the storyteller in you going. So, that's cool, Wayne. I'm gonna have to hunt me down a copy of that.
I just looked in. It's only $25 on Amazon right now.
So. I'm gonna get it.
Do it.
Yeah. it wasn't expensive. I was able to get it with a gift card I got from my boss. So
yeah, Aaron, maybe you need to have a talk with your boss.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Or maybe they've already sent you one, but you didn't click it because you thought it was.
Right. I am totally that guy. That would have just gone to junk mail.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, speaking of bosses, I was out of town this week for work, and I use, you know, flights are opportunities for one of two things for me: a nap or to get caught up on TV shows. Mm-hmm. In this situation, it was a little bit of both, but I finished up Midnight Mass on Netflix, which is not a new show. Just to clarify, Midnight Mass is by Mike Flanagan. Mike Flanagan is the guy, the creator behind Haunting of Hill House, Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, the most recent show, Fall of the House of Usher. He uses a lot of the same cast, does a lot of Stephen King movies. He did the Dr. Sleep movie. So he's definitely like got a pedigree. And Midnight Mass is a show I was always interested in, but the trailers were definitely subtle. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those things that I'd watch the trailer, I'd be like, I like the cast, I like the crew, but the show, I don't know what the hell it's about other than the fact that it looks like it's a religious horror set on an island. Well, so I finally gave it a shot. And so it is only, I believe, 7 episodes. But they are 7 meaty episodes. Each episode is an hour plus.
What streaming platform is it on?
It is on Netflix.
Ooh, I'll have to check it out.
And so it is fantastic. It very much, you know, without revealing too much, because I think, now don't get me wrong, within the first episode, you're going to understand, you know, where the story is going. Though there are lots of surprises, it is very much there's a lot of religion to it. It is about an island. This guy, I'm not ruining anything here because this part is in the trailer. This guy who gets drunk, accidentally kills someone in a drunk driving accident, goes to jail for it, and returns home after his jail time to move in with his parents. And home is kind of an island, very small knit community on an island that is very, very religious. Most of the island goes to church on Sunday, you know, that kind of thing, or multiple times a week. And so the story is very much rooted in this island and how closely knit the church community is. And there is a new preacher, or priest, excuse me, in the local church. And without revealing too much, it is very much like rooted in religion. At the same time, strong Salem's Lot vibes, if you're familiar with Salem's Lot.
I love Salem's Lot.
And it is just fantastic. It is very well acted. It is a slow burn, but each episode does have horror to it. And it definitely builds to, you know, as you get into the last few episodes, the last 3 episodes, I say, are just kind of like, wow, really, really nonstop.
Was it created for Netflix?
It was created for Netflix. Huh. And you can see the Stephen King
influence.
But at the same time, I have Stephen King issues. I love Stephen King. But at the same time, I find Stephen King a little repetitive.
Many black vans are going to show up in the story?
Zero black vans in this story. But I think it is right up your alley, Aaron. Cool. I really enjoyed it. So Midnight Mass is the name of the show. It's from 2021.
Oh, wow.
Fairly recent. A lot of actors, if you've kind of seen any of these other shows, you'll probably recognize some of the faces, but really fantastic.
Cool. I will check that out. There
are so many new streaming things that I have not gotten around to watch. The new Avatar The Last Airbender live action series is out on Netflix, and I haven't watched
it yet. And it's been renewed for 2 more seasons, I saw.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I saw that they haven't watched any of it yet.
There's a new show on Netflix called The Gentleman, which is a Guy Ritchie.
I have heard TV about series. It. I've not seen it.
It just came out, I think, yesterday as of this recording. So I would like to check that out as well.
Well, have you started watching Shogun yet?
No, it is on my list.
It is beautiful. I watched the first episode. It is very subtitle intensive, which was a concern. And, you know, we've talked about my issues with subtitles, that they move too fast and the text is too small. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, conversational speed Japanese, which is really fast. And man, those subtitles move quick on the screen.
Now, not to encourage it, because I always prefer to watch things in subtitles, but yeah. On Hulu, I did notice there is an English dub.
And I watched the first episode in the subtitled version, but I'm for enjoyment, I'm gonna have to flip over to the English dub because man, it was killing me.
It's a lot. Okay.
It's a lot. It's a lot for someone who has a focal in their eyeglass prescription. It was really challenging.
Mm, I can imagine. So. You know, and since we're kind of talking about streaming stuff. You know, Rebel Moon Part 2 is coming soon. Yeah, it's coming relatively soon. I think April 19th is the official date. And, you know, I'm not a Joe Rogan fan. Before I get into this. Yeah. But Zack Snyder was on the Joe Rogan podcast now, which is, for whatever it's worth, it's available for free on YouTube. I have not seen the podcast yet, but because on top of my Joe Rogan issues, it's also like 2.5 hours every podcast. It's not bite sized like this lovely podcast you're listening to right now. But Zack Snyder was on this week, and you know, there's a lot of snippets and stuff coming out about it. I think he's obviously prepping for Rebel Moon Part 2. He's also talking how the Rebel Moon director's cut, you know, both director's cuts are apparently due out at the end of the summer.
People are mining that interview for clickbait titles like crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. They're like, Zack Snyder says that Batman needs to kill. And I'm like, maybe he does say that. But like, you know, it is. I mean, I'm very curious to watch the interview. I probably will, despite my Joe Rogan issues, just because I do like Zack Snyder. I know everyone here has their issues.
The big one that I've seen with clickbait is Zack Snyder says that more people watched Rebel Moon than watched Barbie in theaters.
You know what the sad thing is? Despite that being clickbait, I'm not terribly in disagreement with that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, I think Netflix numbers are huge. It's just not publicized.
Yeah, well, and they have publicized some of the numbers for Rebel Moon on it. But there's a lot of things it doesn't take into account that he does mention, you know, in the article some. But things like the numbers are anybody that started it. So if they started it and shut it off within 5 minutes, it still counted that they watched it.
Yeah.
And it's things like they count, they assume two people for every one view that because it's in a household.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. They porn watched it, you know.
Yeah. 5 minutes at a clip.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things like that. But his point of it wasn't to try to even inflate his own numbers. His point of it, and you guys know I'm not a Zack Snyder fan, so the fact that I'm defending his statement is, you know, kind
of
big.
I think a lot of what he says is taken out of context, because Zack Snyder is a relatively humble person when I've seen him live.
Absolutely. And,
his point was more focused on the fact that these new means of getting media out there have a larger audience, have a larger footprint than theaters.
I think that's true. I think the problem is, and this is a problem for all media, is that while you can get it to more people and more people will see it, I don't think I think that the quality criteria for it to stick with people is a lot higher, because there's so much content right now, and so much of it, because there's so much of it, is viewed as disposable. And so people will consume media and then not remember what the hell they saw. What was that thing? Whereas back in the day, you knew what that thing was because you were waiting for it to come out all summer. You paid money to go see that specific thing. You sat in a theater, you know, and I mean, it was an event. You know, now you go, what am I going to watch tonight on Netflix or Hulu or Prime or Max or Pluto TV or whatever?
Yeah.
And, you know, you just stumble into some random thing. And I mean, you know, people just forget. I mean, I know so many times I'm like, I think I've seen this before.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the types of things. There's a question of, did I actually watch it, or did I put it on in the background as background sound while I did it to other things?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and the types of things that used to be event television are just readily available now.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's crazy to me that there's, and we talk about it, and that's why we kind of have our little streaming TV catch up when we talk, because there's just so much media right now. Well,
I know when I turned on Shogun, and again, it's a beautiful film. I mean, it's beautifully produced, and I think the casting and whatnot's terrific. However, there's not a star. You know, when the original Shogun was produced, you had Richard Chamberlain, who, while he is not a film star, he was a bona fide TV star, and he looked like a TV star, and he held the screen. The guy who plays John Blackthorne doesn't do that. And I'm like, wow, big, big switch. Also true of the guy who plays Lord Torinaga, who was played by it was on the tip of my tongue a second ago, in the original, was played by, you know, longtime Japanese film star. It's killing me. Andrew would know. This guy also really good, but he just seems like any other, you know, sort of Japanese actor. He doesn't hold that hold your attention like a star does. And I found that really challenging about watching this version of Shogun, is that there isn't that just next level charisma in the cast, even though they're all really good. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. But the first episode was.
I just want to, before we proceed with this podcast, I just want to call out that you, Aaron,
sir,
just said, you just put us down. You're like, if Andrew was here, he would know this answer. But I've got you guys.
I only say who don't that because Dick. Cause I know that Andrew is an art house Japanese.
I know. I'm just messing. Toshiro Mifune, according to Wikipedia.
Toshiro Mifune. Yes.
Mifune.
And I love Toshiro Mifune. And he is magnetic in the original Shogun.
Yeah.
And also, one last thing, and I'll shut up about Shogun. There's a lot of stuff that happens at night. And it really compares and contrasts, you know, in the original Shogun, you can see what's going on at night. Can't. in the new version. Because I just want to say one last time, and I know I've said this many times on the podcast before, you know, I understand that the filmmaker wants you to feel like it's actually night, right? Mm-hmm. But as a TV watcher, I want to be able to see what the hell's going on, you know? Yeah. I get how in, you know, 80s and 90s, television and earlier, you know, we'd all kind of remark, like, sure is awfully bright out there at night. But I think there's a happy medium between, you know, able to read, you know, in the dark versus not being able to see anything in the dark.
Okay, that's one of my frustrations right now with a lot of shows. And I think that some of the Disney live action ones are particularly bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
We end up turning off all the lights in the room so we can.
It drives me nuts. And you know, the worst offender on that was Game of Thrones in its final season. They had an entire episode where you couldn't see Dick, and I remember sitting in a hotel room because I was traveling on business trying to watch it, and I went in to I downloaded a thing online to tell me how to hack the controls on the TV set I was watching in my hotel room so that I could change the contrast and brightness. And it wasn't until after the show was over that I realized that, no, that was just how they shot it. Because I thought there was something wrong with the television. It was maddening to me how directors will shoot film like that. I want to see what's going on. And, you know, so many times I feel like it's how they hide their bad special effects. But, you know, in Bass Reeves, Paul, you know.
I still haven't seen.
Yeah, well, there's no reason to see it. It's terrible. They wasted a great intellectual property on a really shitty television show. But they shoot a lot of stuff at night, and because it's happening, you know, out in 19th century frontier West, you know, there's no, you know, lights other than like a campfire, and you just can't see shit. It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. Yeah. I mean, I won't sit through a television show any longer that does that to me. I'm just like, I'm not going to sit here and be frustrated because you didn't, you know, figure out how to light your set.
I love that this isn't just my complaint, because I've been complaining about this for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
I'd say those streaming shows, like, I'm behind on so much. I just don't have much time right now. And then they're fighting with YouTube because I can watch a quick YouTube video in like 15 minutes and be done with it and move on. But one show I will watch the moment it drops is all of the final trailers have been coming out for the new Fallout series.
You know, I'm curious. I've never played Fallout, but I've always liked the media around it. I've always enjoyed like the what I've seen online and the ad campaigns and whatnot. I'm interested in that. But I have a question.
Yeah.
Have either of y'all watched that Halo series?
I have not. I have heard the second season. I've heard the first season is a bit of a slog, but the second season is good.
It looks good, but I don't know anybody who's watched it.
Yeah, and I know so a few people who've watched it. I'm very curious about it, but I kind of feel like Shogun's my next show. Now, I will say I tried Masters of Air on Apple. Yeah. I find it very, very slow.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I think I'm okay not continuing with this.
I like the concept of it. You know, it's done by the same guy who did Band of Brothers. And I love Band of Brothers, but boy, every time I look at the trailers for it, I'm like, I don't know. It's not calling me.
Yeah, I don't have the same, like, I never played the Halo series. I played, like, one game of it once, and mostly because I didn't have the systems that it was on at the time.
Right.
And, like, Fallout, for me, was my big series. I am a huge fan. I have.
Well, there's a new show for that coming out, too.
That's what we were just talking about, Paul.
Yeah, Paul, wake up. I'm listening. Join the conversation.
Just not really.
Yeah, no, like Fallout, I have the wallet. I have bobbleheads around. I used to have a backdrop that was from the video game behind me for when I was on video calls. So it's like that one, the story is something I'm really into. Where the Halo, I don't know the story.
Yeah,
to a certain extent, I feel like that's a benefit, though. I'd prefer for a show based on a video game.
Yeah.
I'd honestly kind of prefer to go in a little blind because I feel like that's just going to take away from my enjoyment of it.
That was me for The Last of Us, right? I've never played the game. I was familiar with the game, but had never played it and really enjoyed the TV show. I'm hoping that's true of Halo. I'm like, well, it's what, 2, 3, 4 seasons, whatever it is.
It's only on its second season. So I think, and it's not even finished. I think we're only a few episodes in. So
I don't have as much to catch up on. I was a little concerned about how much was out there, but I'm getting inundated with ads for it. So
yeah, I'm very curious about it. Maybe I'll give the first episode a shot in time for we'll coordinate and have a little conversation. We'll give it we'll dip a toe in the water.
Fine.
We can do it together. It's a suicide pact, Aaron. Well, before we move off of streaming, news. There was news this week that Brian Michael Bendis has a couple of properties that will be converted into new TV shows as well.
Yeah, it's a first look deal, right?
Yeah.
That he is, he has licensed it's an Amazon first look deal for Jinx, Pearl, and Murder, Inc. And of those three, the only one that I think would be successful is Murder, Inc. I think Murder, Inc. is probably really geared to that sort of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, I'm not a big Jinx or Pearl fan.
I also would be very surprised if any of them actually come to fruition.
Oh, same.
Right.
Well, I think Murder, Inc., because, it really does, tell that Murder Incorporated, historical sort of, mob, Jewish mob storytelling. I think there's a market for that. I mean, I honestly do. I think that there is an opportunity to tell some interesting stories there that I think people would actually be interested in. I don't know that Jinx or Pearl is going to bring a lot of people to the table.
Yeah, I never read any of the books and don't know what any of them are about.
Well, and I got to say, unless they look really good, because there's so much stuff like we've just been talking about for a while, they have to look really damn good to draw me in.
No, absolutely. It is a extremely competitive market.
Yeah, I point to like Jupiter's Legacy. Incredible story. And I think it got lost in all of the other things because people didn't know the property.
And I absolutely loved it. And, it got canceled almost like the moment it was out of the gate.
Yeah. Well, and now there's a new season of Somebody Feed Phil. So I can't watch anything else until I watch that. But, there was a lot of, I don't want to say controversy, but there were a lot of clickbait article titles because you know, Disney has been releasing certain Disney Plus shows on Blu-ray or 4K, you know, Blu-ray, whatever, in recent months, including the first two seasons of The Mandalorian, I think WandaVision, and maybe, I don't know, Loki or something. And they announced an upcoming round. That of releases that includes the first season of Andor and Obi-Wan. And there was a lot of clickbait titles that Obi-Wan says the complete series on the cover. And it's like Disney has quietly canceled Obi-Wan. And I just feel like that's a misnomer because Disney never said that Obi-Wan would be anything other than a special event series with one season.
Yeah, right. I never expected more. It was one story.
As much as I love Ewan McGregor in the role, like it felt like a one and done to me. Like it felt like we're good. Now I know what happens to Obi-Wan after this. So I'm good.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's demonstrative of how clickbaity the world is. Because I'm like, I don't think that there was ever a conversation that there was going to be a series two.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I will say, for what it's worth, I did pre-order the Blu-ray for that one.
Did you?
And I did for Mando season one and two, just because Disney Plus, you know, given everything that's going on in the streaming space right now and how many people are selling, you know, taking things off and selling them, you know, I don't think Star Wars shows have any danger of that. But, you know, then again, Star Trek keeps bouncing back and forth between, you know, streaming properties.
Paramount Plus didn't know how to do what they do.
Yeah.
Disney does.
They do. I just feel like I would like to have a physical copy of I mean, Star Wars is just one of those things. You know, we talked about this. I'm a Star Wars guy, and I wanted – so I bought Mando season one and two, and I pre-ordered Obi-Wan as well because these are shows that I will revisit, and I don't want to be in a place where I will be unable to revisit them whenever I want.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been continuing my, you know, MCU rewatch, and, you know, one of the great things about having cracked ribs and not moving around too much for a little while is it gave me some time to go back and rewatch the Ed Norton Hulk movie.
Oh, I like that movie.
You know, I remember disliking the big monster fight at the end.
Because
the reason why I disliked it is they were just running at each other down a straight street, and it was like there was no there weren't three dimensions. You know, the Hulk should be jumping and, you know, going left to right, but they were just running straight at each other most of the time. And I found that very, like, frustrating. But, you know, I was reminded that there was a lot of good in that movie, even though Ed Norton apparently was a real asshole on set, which produced the rule at Disney that we don't hire assholes. That is a rule. This is a no asshole set. Yeah. So, you know, you can't work here if you're going to be a jackass.
But I'm going to say something controversial. I feel like Ed Norton did a better job than Mark Ruffalo.
I don't disagree. I think the two characters are very different. You know, Mark Ruffalo doesn't feel dangerous. Right.
Yes. He feels like Norton, a sweet old guy.
Well, and even so is the Hulk. He's good natured, right?
Yeah.
He is more like a comic book Hulk than Ed Norton's Hulk. Ed Norton's Hulk was more Frankenstein monster, you know, more uncontrolled. I like that contrast. And you know, I'll say, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned about what do we do about some of these roles in the Marvel Cinematic Universe with actors who can't return or won't return. You know, do we put in a new character, or do we put in a new actor? And, you know, I think we were all fine with Mark Ruffalo taking over as Ed Norton. I don't think it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I think we'll all be fine if we need to recast these roles. I just think you have to do it well.
Yeah, exactly. And Mark Ruffalo has done an admirable job. I mean, he's been the Hulk for more than anybody else. So other than, you know, obviously Bill Bixby. But, you know, I mean, he's doing a fine job, but I think he's just getting a little long in the tooth for the character. And I think it's time to put some teeth back into Hulk as a character.
Yeah, there is a big shift in Mark Ruffalo's appearance from aging.
Oh, yeah.
From his first appearance to the last. You're like, oh, wow, that's a very different Mark, you know.
Yeah, I think there are certain characters that they would need a story reason to recast them, and others they could just recast.
Yeah, agreed.
If they want to recast Tony Stark, I think they need to do a multiverse story to do it, because Robert Downey basically made that character his.
Yeah, and I think we'll get that with Secret Wars. I mean, yeah. I feel like Secret Wars is the reset button that, frankly, the MCU needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope they do it right.
I don't feel like they would need to do that with Mark Ruffalo.
No,
as I love him in that role, I think they could just replace him with a new actor.
He's not bad. I think I've just grown weary of that interpretation of Hulk.
Yeah.
But you know, in our final bit of Funny Books with Aaron and Polly, our final bit of movie news.
We are renaming the show to Streaming.
Streaming with Aaron Polly. I feel like that's a different audience.
It's a whole different audience.
Golden Streaming with Aaron and Polly. You know, we haven't talked about Superman because we haven't podcasted in a few weeks, but, you know, James Gunn has been posting a couple of things. He has changed the title from Superman Legacy to just Superman. He's revealed the Superman S, which is inspired by Kingdom Come instead of your traditional S. Some photos of the David Corenswet in costume have leaked online. Very traditional Superman costume, very traditional short cape. But
interesting. I have not seen the leaked photos.
Oh, you have not seen the leaked photos. I've only seen the very traditional Superman costume.
Yeah, I have only seen that official logo, and even then it was covered by snow partially, and I was withholding any opinion until I see the whole costume.
Yeah, it is a very traditional. I think for what it's worth, it is traditional to the point of maybe we'll see. You know, obviously paparazzi photos are way different than we'll actually see on the screen, because I feel like the short cape does him no benefit.
We don't know how they'll digitally manipulate that.
Very true.
Yeah, and who knows? The cape may actually change length between scenes on how it's used.
Mm-hmm.
This is true, too.
I've seen in other movies where a cape will be short when moving around and when they're doing scenes from, like, chest up filming.
Yeah, yeah.
But then long for distance scenes. And
I know we are way off on our agenda here, Paul.
That's okay.
But some things that I would love to see in the Superman movie is, number one, I would love a very different Fortress of Solitude. I'm tired of the Crystal Fortress.
I am too.
I am just, you know, that I appreciate that was new and different, and it was great in Superman 79. That's not what I need anymore. I need a very different, I almost would like a Silver Age, you know, Fortress of Solitude, you know, with the big gold key out in the snow. I want something different. I want a different imagining. It's kind of what I appreciate. One of the things I appreciated about Man of Steel is that it was the spaceship, right? You know, that served as his fortress. That's not what I want, but I did appreciate that it was different, right?
As much as I love the show, my most hated fortress was the one from Superman and Lois.
The cave?
Yeah, the cave that didn't seem to have any technology at all.
Yeah.
No, I'm a little tired of that interpretation of it. Absolutely.
I would love to see something more along the lines of the classic Fortress of Solitude from the comics, but of course updated. And then I want to see it, you know, with all this, you know, Kryptonian stuff. And then I want to see, like, effects from home, because it's Superman's clubhouse, right? So I want to see, you know, maybe the quilt his mother made him. You know, I want to see, you know, little Kansas farmhouse touches to his Fortress of Solitude.
You want to see some sports team memorabilia.
That's right. You know, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I also, maybe an arcade machine, you know, but I would also love to see, we were talking about capes, you know, back in the day, you would always see Superman super compress his Clark Kent outfit and put it in a pocket inside his cape.
Yeah,
I would just love that in the movie. I think that would be – I would love to see the return. Not – I don't want to make it hokey. I don't want to make it cheesy. I would just love to see some kind of Silver Age references other than him looking at a phone booth.
You know what I didn't mind, despite the fact that the writing of that era was so inconsistent, is when the Fortress of Solitude was like in the Amazon.
Uh-huh.
It was like a pyramid in the jungle kind of thing. Yep. I feel like that was at least something different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Superman the movie inspiration, the ice crystal palace, it feels cold to me, and Superman is not a cold person.
Right. Well, you know, and I think that was part of the contrast they were trying to make, is the warmth of his raising in Smallville versus the cold of Krypton, to say it as Marlon Brando would.
Maybe they'll just make it his garage. He's converted his garage in Smallville.
Well, you know, I know, Wayne, you didn't watch the most recent season of Lois and Clark, or Clark and Lois, whatever the hell that show is called.
Superman and Lois.
Thank you. The very last scene of the last episode.
I did watch that.
Yeah, they're going out to the new fortress that he's established out on the water, right? So, you know, there'll be a different fortress in this next season, but given how deep the budget's been cut, I'm sure it'll just be a cave on the water.
Yeah. So. That wasn't this season. That was the previous season. This season, they've gone to that fortress.
That was not in the season I watched.
Oh yeah, no, they've gone to that fortress. The season I had to stop watching, the most recent one, was the cancer storyline.
Yeah, and that was at the end of the cancer storyline.
No, because the end of that ended up being the Luthor
being brought in. They never went there in that season.
Yeah,
interesting memory. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, since we're talking about Superman, you know, and streaming, this is kind of a little bit of a combination of both, because Aaron, did you ever finish Jack Ryan?
Yes, I did. I finished Jack Ryan.
I never actually saw season four. I feel like I need to finish the story, despite the fact that
it's the weakest of the seasons. Yeah.
That show just kind of got progressively weaker. I mean, I think season two was better than season one, season three weaker, and then season four I hear is the weakest. But
agreed.
But one of the highlights of that show was his friend, Wendell, played by Wendell Pierce, who is also from The Wire.
Yeah, I love Wendell Pierce.
He is. He's been cast as
Perry White.
Perry White in the upcoming Superman movie. I think that is good casting.
I do too. Wendell Pierce plays a terrific curmudgeon. I absolutely see him as Perry White.
Yeah,
he's great with a cigar in his mouth. He's going to be a great Perry White.
And Lawrence Fishburne was I thought Lawrence Fishburne was great casting as well.
Yeah, I thought he was really good casting in Man of Steel.
Yeah. So I other than David Cornsweet, who I just don't have a lot of familiarity with, I think we've got a good cast. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. Hey, Superman, it's hope, right? So
yeah, we'll see. I will say Gunn has come out and said that those leaked photos are completely fake. And he actually pointed out problems with the picture that showed that it was obviously photoshopped. Not anything I noticed looking at them, but yeah, no, he much came out and said that is not the suit.
All right. Well, ignore my commentary about the suit then.
Paul got clickbaited.
I did. That shit happens. Happens all the time. But all right. So we've been talking about streaming. And possibly that's because it was a relatively weak week.
Oh, it was a terrible week for comic.
I feel like, Aaron, you and I are going to have frank opinions on Ultimate X-Men, though.
Oh, God, it was garbage. Oh,
it was terrible.
It was garbage, Paul.
I feel
Are
like
you telling me that you like that book?
I feel like it. I hated the fact that this book was called X-Men.
I think that's my complaint about the book, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Other than that, if it wasn't called X-Men, I feel like I would actually have loved this issue. And I'll tell you, it is because it felt very Japanese horror to me. You know, a lot of the same tropes that you see in J horror movies, like, you know, Ring and Grudge. And so I'm like, whoa, this is really good. This is nice and creepy. I wish it wasn't called X-Men, because it feels like it has, other than the fact that the character that they're introducing is clearly Husk. Husk, I think. Yeah. Wayne probably knows. Other than that, this is not an X-Men book in the slightest. They're pimping it as X-Men in this universe that Jonathan Hickman has established. It does not feel like it belongs. It does not feel like X-Men. But if it was not an X-Men book, I feel like I would really have enjoyed it.
Okay, Paul, I will say that you have won me over a little bit. My issue reading with
You're easy, Wayne. Easy.
My issue reading it when I was reading through is like, this is not an X-Men book. This is ridiculous. They're calling this X-Men book. This art is not a fit for Marvel Comics in any way. But if I were reading this as a manga that was not supposed to be a Marvel comic, I would actually have really enjoyed it. So I do think I approached it expecting it to be an actual X-Men book, because that's what it says it is, when the story itself is not terrible. it's just not an X-Men book.
Not even a little bit.
That is my complaint. Because we saw a glimpse of what the mutant situation is like in the earlier Ultimate book, the 4-issue, I forget what it was called.
Ultimate Invasion, I think.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Ultimate Invasion. We saw, a glimpse into what's going on with the mutants, right? And so I expected a book that would tie, that would link that storytelling. And that was not this book. You're right, Paul. It absolutely should not have been called X-Men. And I give you that. It may be good, if it is represented as a J horror book. I hated this thing.
Yeah, and I hated that about it.
Yeah. I got really angry about this book because I was expecting an Ultimate X-Men book. And for whatever reason, they mislabeled the book.
Yeah. It feels like it was some type of Elseworlds book that was already written and drawn that they slapped. Yeah. That like an alternate reality, manga X-Men book that they had intended and they just slapped the Ultimate X-Men on it. And I will tell you, if it didn't have the Ultimate X-Men title on it, like even if it just said manga X-Men, I would not have purchased it. So it worked throwing Ultimate X-Men on it, but I hated that this is the interpretation of the X-Men that they're implementing into the Ultimate Universe. But removing that, I enjoyed the story and that aspect.
The fact that it was labeled Ultimate X-Men, and I am so jazzed about the Ultimate books right now. I didn't look at the preview pages, right?
Yeah.
I just grabbed the book. I won't do that again.
No.
For this. I mean, they squandered.
I was grabbing anything that has Ultimate in the title right now, but I'm looking at preview pages going forward.
Yeah, they squandered their goodwill with me, and I think that's a shame. I did not enjoy Ultimate Black Panther, but I didn't feel like I was misled about what would be in that book.
Yeah.
I felt misled here, and I don't know. There must have been a conversation, right? Somebody said, should we call this Ultimate X-Men? Should we call this something else? It's so wildly different. And I appreciate that they're taking a big swing, but I felt like I was misled.
Yeah, I feel like for this interpretation of the Ultimate Universe to work, ultimately is the right term.
Yeah.
The books have to have a consistent tone and feel.
Correct.
Since it is all fed. Like this isn't a universe where different interpretations and people diverging really work, because this is all feeding the same overall plot thread. It references it in the beginning, with the Maker and all that. So I feel like you have to be consistent in tone and feel amongst your books for what they're trying to do.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that particularly when you're in these initial framing titles that are really going to, set up the foundations of what you're doing here in this version of the Ultimates, you've got to be clear on what you're doing. And, like I said, this was so broad. I think it was a big mistake. I think it was a huge mistake. And it certainly alienated me from the storyline. So I got so angry. I got so angry.
Understandably. Yeah. I mean, I felt very much the same as you, but at the same time, I was like, I had to remove the fact that this is set in this Ultimate Universe. And then I was like, it's actually not bad. It's just not what it's not what's advertised for this universe.
Well, I did not read, but I know you boys did. Spectacular Spider-Man number one. Curious to know what you guys thought about that.
Yeah, because I am wanting a good Spider-Man title.
Yeah. Well, before you go in, Wayne, because I do want to hear your thoughts, I just want to preface this by saying what drew me into this book is, one, Umberto Ramos, which I love Umberto Ramos, Wayne hates. But more so than that was the fact that the book is written by Greg Weisman. Greg Weisman is known for his animated series. He is one of the creators and writers of the Gargoyles TV series from Disney that's become a cult classic. Also of the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series that everyone loves and remembers that got cut in its prime. So great pedigree for me going into this book. Wayne, what'd you think?
Yeah, so starting with the art, after the first few pages, I had to stop and say, is this Humberto Ramos? Because it didn't seem like it. But then from there, it got really Humberto Ramos. The first few times we see them, they're not quite so, you know.
I think it's because they're in costume. I think it's when they're out of costume that you get the Humberto Ramos aspect.
Yeah, well, even after that, after you start seeing him out of costume, then even back in costume, it gets very much him. So naturally, the artwork is something I didn't care for. I love seeing these two characters together, though. I like this idea that they're just trying to set up a one day a week to hang out as people and not as spider people, and how that blatantly doesn't work. I love the confusion that they're dealing with a version of the Jackal, and Peter yells out Miles, and Miles thinks that he's giving away his secret identity. Yeah. I enjoy the interplay between the characters a lot. I am definitely on board for issue number 2. I don't know what exactly they're doing with that Jackal. That's obviously a clone that was sent out.
Yeah,
of some sort, because you're dealing with Miles Warren. So
yeah, I was okay. I was lukewarm on this book. I liked the art. I liked the feel. I really struggled with the book is just nonstop action, which is fine, but it's also nonstop action. Meanwhile, it's jumping back and forth in time. It's jumping back and forth to like a few weeks ago, a day ago, earlier in the day. Meanwhile, across the world, and it's like every other page is jumping back and forth in time or to a different location. And for me, even though, you know, I understood what was going on, it felt a little too chaotic for me from that aspect. I almost would have preferred the book was told chronologically.
See, I didn't mind the jumping around at all. Sometimes that does bother me. But I would say it's not all action, because you have a whole page of, actually two pages dedicated to Pete trying to become a regular at this coffee shop.
True.
I could have done without that whole page of him and Moose talking. But also, I found it interesting that a lot of the characters in the coffee shop were characters from Ultimate Spider-Man, the original run.
Yeah, that was interesting.
They were Pete's, you know, Ultimate Peter Parker's classmates that were not from the regular comics. So I thought that was kind of interesting to bring some of them into it in this book format. I love anytime we see Shoshana and the reference to her and Flash, mm-hmm. you know, being an ex and basically her being pissed at him.
There was a lot to like about this book. I just, you know, for me, I did struggle a little bit with the storytelling and the fact, you know, you mentioned the one page. I actually didn't mind that page. But what I struggled with was that there were literally three pages of Pete and Miles trying to web up the Jackal. Yeah. Like, and it's very similar panels. It's just, you know, them bouncing back and forth, trying to, you know, web up and stop Jackal running down the street. Very, you know, but three pages of four panels each, very similar. I'm like, okay, I get it. I feel like you could have gotten that done in one. For me, it was mixed. I liked the banter. I liked the feel. I just, there were some storytelling aspects that I didn't care for. That being said, I will give it a second issue because it's got a great pedigree. I actually, like I've already mentioned, enjoyed the gang war in Amazing Spider-Man. I'm sure I'll give it one more issue and it'll start sucking again. And yeah. So if I want some Spider-Man in my life, I feel like this is probably the book for it.
Yeah, and that was my thought too. And I, like I said, I like Miles. I always have. I just haven't liked his actual book since he came over from the Ultimate Universe, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I like him. I like seeing him and Peter together. So it's getting at least a second issue. There were some things I didn't like, but overall, I like their interplay and I like the banter enough to
give it
keep
shot.
Going for now.
Yeah, agreed.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we have new from DC Comics. We've got Batman and Dylan Dog. And I don't know if you guys saw that ad in DC Books. I guess we didn't talk about any DC books, but Dylan Dog is in an Italian like supernatural detective book. And they're doing a Batman Dylan Dog crossover, which intrigues me. So I may give that one a shot depending on how the art looks. We also get new issues of Action Comics, the Jason Aaron finale of his Bizarro storyline, and the newest issue of Batman and Robin from Joshua Williamson. From Image Comics and Skybound, we get the sixth issue, the end of the first arc of Transformers. Really looking forward to talking with Wayne and Andrew about that. From Marvel Comics, we get the second issue of Ultimate Black Panther. I think we were a little lukewarm on the first issue. I'm definitely giving it a second issue to see how that goes.
Yeah, enjoy.
And we also get the first issue of Ghost Rider Final Vengeance. Now, it feels like this is, you know, the latest Final Vengeance of Johnny Blaze, but I'll see how the art looks and see how that one goes. I keep popping into
really
Ghost Rider.
This one's really final.
Really final. Really final. And from IDW, we get Sons of Star Trek, which we talked about a little while back on our Star Trek podcast, which features Alexander and Jake teaming up and you know, with alternate versions of other children of Starfleet legends. So kind of curious about that one. I'll give that one a first issue shot.
I am so far behind on my Star Trek
book. I am so far behind.
And, you know, I've got to get caught up because you and I are going to be, you know, dusting off Star Trek with Aaron and Polly for the final season of Discovery.
Star Trek Discovery is coming, yes.
And so, you know, we're going to have to get caught up so we can talk about comics as well. Yikes. Well, we want to know what books you're behind on. Also, what you're streaming. And if you want to hear a special episode of Golden Streaming with Aaron and Polly, give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. If we use your comment on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Yeah, probably not Threads, though.
No.
Threads really isn't a thing.
I feel like that died very quickly.
Well, guys, great talking to you guys today. I'm hoping that the next time we talk, I haven't broken any other bones.
Yeah, that's definitely the preference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll do my level best. How about that? Talk to you guys later. Time.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.